Hello, I'm Ellen Fanning from Life Matters. What might it take for you to change your mind? Not something simple like what you're having for lunch, but your whole ideology, maybe even the belief system you've carried with you since childhood. Well, one of my favourite interviews from the past year was a discussion with Zelda LaGrange, a white Afrikaner woman who took a job working for one man, Nelson Mandela, someone she'd once considered the enemy, who was possibly the most influential and greatest statesman of our time. And his company not only changed her mind, but literally unravelled her ideology.
Yes, I've been very, very privileged to have my life touched and influenced by the greatest statesman I consider of our times. And it's left a lasting impression, footprint on my life, so to speak.
You describe yourself as a daughter of apartheid. By 13, you say you were a racist. How were you brought up?
In a very conservative family, really believing in apartheid, living apartheid. In those years, we were very much controlled by the apartheid regime through propaganda that was fed to us through the media, through schools, churches, even religious system. So we believed that. We didn't question it because we were on the receiving end of privilege.
And what was the message?
The message was one of segregation, of oppression, of superiority.
We are white superior to black?
We are better. We are more intelligent. We cannot be challenged in any way. So that is the premise on which we lived our lives and from which we treated black people.
And how was it permissible to treat black people?
As secondary class citizens, first of all. They were not in South Africa in the apartheid years. They were not even registered. So your birth and your death was not even registered. They were segregated to areas, isolated to areas where they were only allowed to move and not in white areas.
So did you ever encounter a black person growing up?
Yes, I did. We were all, as white kids, we were all brought up by loving domestic workers in our households. But as a young child at the age of 13, you don't draw that distinction between, this person is black, but she's in our house and she's no different from the rest of the 40 million black people because she loves me. You know, there's no distinction, but she's acceptable because she serves you.
It's February 1990 and it's announced that Nelson Mandela will be released from jail on Robben Island after 27 years. What did your dad say that night?
I was actually in the swimming pool at the time of the release. It was February, a very hot time of month in the area where we lived. And my father came outside. I was swimming and he said, you know, now we are in trouble. I said, why? He said, the terrorist has just been released. I said, oh, who's that? He said, Nelson Mandela. I said, oh, and I continued swimming.
What did your father fear?
Retaliation because of years, centuries of oppression and discrimination. And I think understanding it now, we really feared that if black people had the opportunity, they would retaliate and we would basically burn down the country to the ground.
And he thought that Nelson Mandela was a terrorist, a communist, a terrible man.
I think like most white people those days, they thought that he was the face of the liberation struggle. He was the face of the oppressed people. So he would be the leader giving direction in retaliating and taking revenge on white people.
Now, a couple of years later, you're out of that swimming pool and you're allowed to vote and there's a referendum to decide the fate of apartheid. How did you vote in that referendum?
I voted no, don't end apartheid because this serves my being. I'm comfortable living apartheid. I'm privileged, you know, so I don't want this to end. I'm on the receiving end of apartheid, the positive side. So I didn't want it to end and I voted no in the referendum.
Mm. Now, this is somewhat awkward because you're working as a typist in the government and, in fact, there is a moment not too long after that vote where you run into the new president, Nelson Mandela, in the hallway. Can I ask you to read from your book describing that moment?
Certainly. I was looking at the piece of paper in front of me when I nearly bumped into President Nelson Mandela. Surrounded by bodyguards, he extended his hand first to shake mine. I was confused and not sure whether it was proper for me to greet him. I said, "Good morning, Mr. Mandela." One doesn't really know what to do at that point except cry, which I did. It was all too much. I was sobbing. He then spoke to me, but I didn't understand him and I was completely in shock. I had to say, "Excuse me, Mr. President," for him to repeat what he had just said to me. And after gathering my thoughts or guts, I'm not sure which, I realized that he was addressing me in Afrikaans. my home language, the language of the oppressor.
He was speaking to you in Afrikaans. What's the significance of that?
I heard him say over the years, Ellen, that when you speak to a man, you speak to his head. When you address a man, you speak to his head. But when you speak to him in his language, you speak to his heart. And that's what he did that day. He destroyed my defenses immediately. He opened me up to change, to questioning. Why did we imprison this man? I mean, he even has respect for me, the people who oppressed him. I don't deserve that respect.
It had an instant effect on you. Why were you sobbing like that?
Because I felt guilty. He was kind. He extended his hand to me. Really, that smile, the warmth of his smile, it was almost an infectious smile. So that guilt, responsibility, and me not knowing what did we do to this man? Why were we so unkind to him? Because he's so nice to me. He's, you know, so respectful. And I'm so undeserving of this.
And you describe it like in a rush, you see yourself 23, 24 years old, and that this man had been in jail longer than you'd been alive. Vroom! That realization, this gentleman who talks to me in Afrikaans.
Yes.
How did that make
you
feel?
The typist, this young 23-year-old, I'm not significant in his life. He could have just, you know, ignored me, walked past me, and he focuses all his attention on me. I wanted to know more about him.
Wanted to apologize.
I wanted immediately to apologize. And that's why I also started crying. And he put his other hand on my shoulder and he said, no, relax, you're overreacting.
Calm down.
Of course, when a president tells you you're overreacting, you compose yourself, trust me. I saw a lot of white people reacting like that because it's that thing of guilt. We wanted to apologize. It would have been justifiable for him to have resentment, yet he did exactly the opposite.
He singles you out, this 20-something-year-old white Afrikaans woman. Why? He wants you to work more closely with him.
I think we probably shared a few things. Firstly, a good sense of humor. We had a similar sense of humor. Secondly, a sense of urgency and work ethic.
Did he ever say, now, Zelda, how did you vote back in that referendum in 19?
Oh, yeah, we openly spoke about
it.
And then he laughed about it. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And you talk about the first 8 months. Unlearning the history that you'd been taught. How destabilizing is that for a person? You know, if this is not true, if this religious basis for apartheid, if apartheid, the central fact of my society, is not true, you can't rely on anything. Anything could be a lie.
I go around now, Ellen, telling people and young people, question everything. You know, I don't want to say question your parents, but don't believe everything you're told. Don't believe propaganda. Don't believe the media. Don't believe politicians. Question things around you. It took a lot of work to unlearn those things and to unlearn prejudice. Albert Einstein said it's easier to crack an atom than to change a prejudice, and that's true.
There's a lovely moment where you describe someone took a photo of you shaking Mandela's hand. It's published in the Sunday paper and your dad just about bursts with pride. Mm. And you write, Mandela was changing South Africans' views one by one. First Zelda, then Zelda's dad.
Exactly.
What about Zelda's parents' friends? What happens there? Do they isolate your parents?
Yes, because there was also a documentary, aired at one point, early years in South Africa, entitled A Day in the Life of the President. And I happened to serve tea in President Mandela's office that day. And it was viewed on TV. And friends of my parents actually said that they can't be friends with them any longer because their daughter served me now. I serve tea to a black man. And that was very hurtful to my parents. But as hurtful as that was,
was hurtful that you called it out. You said, hey, this is what's happening to my family as a result of me being part of this.
Absolutely. But that also started changing their perception because someone had to say that for them to realize,
hey, this is what we're doing.
How cruel, just because you serve tea to someone, but you don't know how kind this person is to my daughter.
You became very central, as you say, and I love reading about the relationship between the two of you. There's a part here I want to read from the book where he says, quick, we're going to a black tie dinner. And he says, Your Majesty, this is my secretary, Zelda. And then you write, A, I wasn't his secretary. And B, I didn't really think she cared.
Yes.
But to my surprise, she took an interest in me and asked how long I'd been working for the president. My answer, almost a year. Little did I know what a greater surprise awaited me inside What happened inside?
It was Queen Noor of Jordan at the time. And then I'm seated next to the queen. I mean, this is as improper and against protocol as you get. Keep in mind, I was still the typist, okay? So the typist ends up next to a queen. And Mr. Mandela sits there as if nothing is wrong. And I try to get away and he shows me basically with his eyes, he showed me to sit down and behave. And I was just so uncomfortable.
He introduces you to the Emperor of Japan as a real Afrikaner, excuse my pronunciation, Boermeisje.
Boermeisje, that's right, that's right.
What does that mean? I mean, presumably the Emperor of Japan doesn't know either.
No, he didn't. And I could see in his face and in his eyes that he didn't know and he didn't care. It's really a term used for proper Afrikaner, you know, girls, I would say.
Farm girls sort of thing.
Farm girls, yeah, because that's our heritage really from the farmer community. But it also signifies the purity of, you know, where we come from. And in a way he was showing or he was telling the emperor that even these people, you know, the Boere, were going to be welcome in the new South Africa as long as they were willing to support the new ideals that he stood for.
He insisted to you once, there is no room for cowards here. If you are a coward, Zelda, you are not going to last here very long. I cannot always defend you. You need to defend yourself by doing what is right. You're holding your heart listening to that. That stays with you?
Every day.
Why was that such a powerful bit of advice?
Maybe because I didn't listen at the time. I just took it for granted.
He wanted to empower you. A black man wanted to empower a white woman.
Yes, and you're insecure at that age, you know, and you, I think you don't believe in yourself. I wish I thanked him maybe for that.
He made you be tough for him. He wanted you to be tough. He wanted you to go forth into the world and make things right for him. You write that, I'm going to keep talking so you can stop crying. He was 80 Sorry. And you struggled to keep up with his energy and he exhausted you. And now he's gone. How have you come to terms with that?
It's difficult. It's like a being in a marriage but without the romantic side, of course. So it's difficult. It's really difficult. And just missing, you know, everyday life with him. It's I think I'll probably be 60 and still not realize the full value of my experiences.
Zelda LaGrange, a white Afrikaner woman who became the private secretary for Nelson Mandela. And she was speaking there to me, Ellen Fanning. For the full version of that interview and all our Life Matters interviews, head to the Life Matters program page. Have a great summer, a wonderful new year, and join us again for Life Matters in 2017.